Gotcha. Welcome to the Village Oak Tree for December 11th. I'm your host, Terrence O'Donnell. Thank you for spending a little time with me once again. We have another insane week in world news. Just within a week, we have chaos from all over the world and it surprised everyone. You people saw all this coming, at least those of us who are not privy to such things. Sit down with me today in a warm spot. Let me tell you about what I found from news media around the world that's not being censored by the U.S. government. And then to wrap things up, I got another chapter from The Priest to read to you. More of Michael Campy's dystopian future story about what the collapse of the United States would look like from a first-person perspective. So let's talk about what's going on. The biggest news of the week is obviously what just happened in Syria and that Bashar al-Assad has left the country for Moscow. I've been watching independent news analysts for the last few days, and the one thing that's starting to become clear, it's mostly all about the petrodollar. In this case, LNG pipelines running through Syria from the Gulf states to Europe. Whoever controls the flow of oil controls the Middle East. Assad was an idiot, and everyone sort of knew it. He dismissed the threats and ignored the warnings, and now he's gone. And I say that because the Russians and the Iranians told him about the threats coming from Idlib, but again, he ignored them, so guess what? It's done now. The U.S. has been stealing oil from the northeastern oil patches via Conoco and the U.S. Army, who's providing security for them, and they've been doing this for several years now. Russia needs those Mediterranean assets in the West, the military bases, and Israel has always wanted Syrian territory for their expansionism to make a greater Israel, although Israel is saying, no, it's just temporary. We're just going in there to defend our territory and all this kind of good stuff. Meanwhile, they're running all the way up to the top, the highest mountain near Damascus and planting a flag saying, yeah, we're just going to be here for a little while. We want to make sure no bad guys are trying to do something to Israel. Well, given Israel's history, I got to wonder how long that's going to work out. You know, they say that Iran was using Syria as a military supply conduit for Hezbollah. And, probably were. And Israel's stopped that right now. But, you know, and then the Turks won a northern territory section for themselves. According to one analyst, they want the northern part of Syria for themselves as part of the old Ottoman Empire. Now, I don't know how true that is, but the Turks have been really seriously worried about the Kurds for a long time, and so that's going to be an issue. So then there's the other various smaller tribe factions in Syria that will now break out and start making their own territorial claims. There are no winners here, as the world will soon see. Israel will win a little bit for now by expanding the Golan Heights. Turkey will continue to try and take out the Kurds, SDF in the north. Russia is going to do all it can to make a deal with the new government coalition to keep their bases over in the northwest. They need the Middle East, they need the Mediterranean seaport most of all. And the West will continue doing it all it can to try and control the flow of oil to gas, oil and gas to Europe. So Syria will probably break up into little fiefdoms with a caliphate in the middle, based on the old ISIS models throughout the winter months. Ahmed al-Shara, the leader of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, says that he will have a new government in place by next March. This is what the West, the U.S., Western Europe, Turkey, and Israel have wrought. None of this will be of any benefit to anyone living in the West, other than the oligarchs and their paid-for politicians. There will be so many territorial disputes going on from now on that any future for cheap oil and gas from Syria will be a long time coming, if at all. Biden went on national TV Sunday night to lie through his teeth about crediting the downfall to a weakening Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah. Well, I would admit that Hezbollah has been weakened, but Iran, they've just been kind of shut off a little bit, but they're far from weak. And Russia, well, yeah, it was a setback for Russia, but trust me, it wasn't serious. I guess Biden feels like he has to try and steal something out of all this as they lost control of the situation on the ground there. His way of theft is trying to control the narrative once again in U.S.'s favor. plus run a heavy bombing campaign against the ISIS rebels in the northeastern Syria. He's defending the Kurds' FDF forces, so he says. So he uses B-52s and F-15s to carpet bomb some desert camps with, you know, to make himself look good. He also says he wants to work with the new government to ensure everything goes okay. In other words, he'll be sending over some political salesmen to try and convince the new government to cozy up to the U.S. rather than the Russians, Iranians, and Hezbollah. I wonder what Biden will try to offer them for this relationship. Think about that for a minute. What does the United States have to offer this new hardline Islamist regime? Well, here's the thing. This is what a lot of journalists are calling this. So, here's the thing. As I was saying, the journalists are calling this regime an Islamist one, Salafate, ISIS, you name it. You know, the leader, Al-Jilani, he's saying, no, we're going to be moderate. We're going to take care of the people and all kinds of stuff. Well, you know, they're already doing executions there, some of the factions, getting rid of the old Syrian army people, the ones that were torturing everybody in the prisons. So the purges are starting. So it's just a matter of seeing how it's all going to work out. So, again, what does the United States have to offer? Sell them crappy weapons, offer them lucrative trade deals, maybe some financial aid with strings attached. Can the U.S. offer the new Syrian government something that no one else can give them? Well, that's what all the, you know, tussle is going to be. Who's going to offer them the best deals? Now, I don't have all the answers, and neither does anybody have all the answers right now. But I'm curious to see how this is going to work out over the next 6 weeks. That's all Joe Biden has left before he gets out to pasture. 6 weeks. Can he pull a rabbit out of his hat before Trump comes in and takes a wrecking ball to it all? I'd be willing to bet that Trump tries to pull the military out of Syria next year, soon after the inauguration. That will leave the Kurds with no protection from the Turks or ISIS. ISIS will likely make some small moves. Then once they realize the United States isn't there anymore, start making bigger ones and so forth. You know, especially when there's nobody to stand in their way, except maybe the Turks. Other groups may pop up and try to make some moves. Without the U.S. to stand in their way, will the Russians pick up the ball? Well, you know they're going to try. Will the Iranians step in to help? If they're allowed to. What will Israel do? There are already bombing places in Syria to shut down the supply lanes from Syria to Lebanon and staking out Syrian territory for themselves. Now, Israel didn't waste any time at all. And there's a lot of people speculating that they kind of knew what was coming and they didn't waste any time. The biggest takeaway from all this is these groups, HTS being the front runner, will eventually get a little more organized and pretty soon they'll establish an extreme Islamist state. Maybe. Much like the one that calls themselves Daesh or ISIS or ISIL or whatever. All these Syrians who are celebrating the end of Assad rule will soon be crying and lamenting about atrocities now being committed by the Islamists. Some of them are already starting to see that. Civil war is probably coming to Syria by next spring, if not sooner, as all these various factions fight over who's going to be in charge and how the territory is going to be run. Mind you, I say territory because the borders of Syria are already starting to change. Think about what Israel's doing right now and what the Turks maybe want to do in the north. There's still fallout from South Korea over their president's attempt to set up what may have been a coup attempt using martial law. There's some debate about that. It was and still is a big deal over there, especially the U.S. I listened to several analysts the day after, and some said it caught the U.S. by surprise. I listened to other ex-military analysts who said that was false. The Pentagon and the commanding general over the U.S. military assets in South Korea probably knew it was coming and just stood by. Someone is giving orders about this from on high. Did Biden know about this beforehand? That's debatable. We may never know the truth of a lot of these things, and they're going to be, because they're going to be secreted away for national security reasons. As I keep saying, censorship is alive and well in the United States. If the U.S. did stand on the sidelines knowing this was coming, then they had a vested interest in this. We'll probably never know what that was. Maybe better control over the government to make sure that South Korea keeps doing as it's being told. There's a lot of unrest over there right now over corrupt political leaders and the overwatch in the United States. There are a lot of South Koreans who want the U.S. to take more of a backseat role instead of behaving like a colonial master. Mostly, like a lot of little countries these days, they want the United States to quit telling them what to do. They want more control over their sovereignty. I've read some stories recently about how South Korea doesn't like the idea of the U.S. using them as a staging ground for a war with China. It's making them very nervous. I can't imagine why. In other places around the world, Ireland held their national elections recently, and Fianna Fáil won the majority. Fine Gael coming in second place, Sinn Féin coming in close third, which is a good showing for Sinn Féin. The bad thing about all that is it likely means that Fianna Fáil will probably set up a coalition with Fine Gael once again, and it will be business as usual, which is not good for the people. It means that despite a budget surplus, healthcare will continue to be underfunded and housing will remain in severe shortage for everyone. I found an example of what that looks like from a Facebook group I follow called Peg's Cottage. Here's an advertisement for an Irish cottage for sale. This place is small, hence the descriptive cottage in the advertisement. I've seen the listing pictures, and it is small compared to American houses, and even European ones for that matter, in a lot of places. If I were single, I would love it. My wife, yeah, not so much. So let me show you a picture of this, and I'll kind of give you a brief description. So this place is it's entitled Brookside Cottage in County Roscommon. It advertises 2 acres of pastured land, terrace gardens, mature trees, a brook with a pond, and it's for sale for 205,000 euros, which comes to about $216,816 and change in U.S. dollars. This is an older style Irish cottage with 2 central fireplaces instead of central heat. If you want to stay warm in the winter months, you'll have to lay in a goodly amount of peat bricks. This is an example of housing prices in Ireland these days. Something like this is considered premium property there, and they wonder why the young professional people want to immigrate to somewhere better, like Canada and Australia, for instance. Western Canada's Irish population is booming, I hear. From the United States, we have Donald Trump, President-elect Donald Trump, doing his usual bullying rhetoric on social media and mainstream news. His threat last week to impose 100% tariffs on any country that tries to de-dollarize made the news. Countries like Russia and China are chuckling a little bit over the lack of economic sense coming from him. For anyone with any common sense, if the U.S. were to impose such extreme tariffs on any country, they would just stop trading with the U.S. and it would bankrupt a lot of companies. I don't imagine the American voters would go for something like that. But when has Trump ever listened to anyone, especially the voters, unless it benefits him? There's been a lot of talk from Eastern Europe over the war in Ukraine. No surprises, there's always something in the news every week about there. This week, we have hints that Zelensky may be thinking about a ceasefire and a negotiation with Russia finally. Then there are other stories saying that he has said no. Of course, we've heard this before, and the West, notably the U.S., has told him to say no. But this time, it sounds like he may be getting serious about it. Trump may have something to do with that, as he keeps saying that he will end the war quickly. He's telling people now that he plans to cut off the funding. Imagine the pushback from the military industrial complex. But you know what? I hope he does. I listened to a well-known analyst on Monday tell the host that the top Russian general called the U.S. top general, and the day after that a phone call took place, Ukraine was stopped from firing any more TACMs, Storm Shadows, and other medium to long-range missiles into Russia. It's been 3 weeks now, And I bet this may also have had an impact on Ukraine's decision to possibly start negotiations. That doesn't mean the U.S. has given up, though. So to add to this, I read a news report from RT this morning, well, two or three of them, actually, saying that Ukraine started firing attackums into Russian territory again. So I got to wonder what's going on here. They held off for about 3 weeks, and now they're firing them into Russian territory again. So I don't know. I can't keep up with this. I don't think anybody can anymore. Some of Biden's people are pushing back before Trump takes over by telling the news media that Ukraine should lower their draft age down to 18 years, like what the Americans have. Keep fighting with all you have, they keep saying. Draft women to fight, they are saying. All the while sitting half a world away thinking smugly that no one will touch them in North America. What if they had to send their kids to a frontline battlefield somewhere? Would they be so public about sending teenagers to get killed, especially if it was one of theirs? On top of that, here's something I talked about a few weeks ago and it's been brought up again. A new story from Russian news about American military equipment and how badly it performs. This time it's about their much vaunted M1A1 Abrams main battle tanks that the U.S. has always said were so good. Everyone should buy a bunch. The U.S. sold 31 tanks to Ukraine after the war started, and Ukraine lost 20 of them to the Russians. Then they mothballed the rest before they were lost as well. They were taken out by drones, missiles, and anti-tank weapons. This is the kind of stuff that the Pentagon doesn't want the American public to know about. I've said before, and I'll say it again, the United States no longer has any technological advantages on the world's battlefields. They don't have enough trained people to man their equipment, especially with their Navy ships. They no longer have any quality military offensive equipment, such as battle tanks, artillery, and missiles. The missile launchers keep breaking down. The tanks are very expensive maintenance nightmare, and their famous F-35s are nothing but flying junk, according to sources. Sources being people that bought them. This applies to nearly all of their hardware. The U.S. military is very much a paper tiger these days, which is probably why they push other countries to fight their wars for them so much since the 20-year wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Ukraine is tired, and the people in Europe and the U.S. want all this to stop. U.S. politicians and their corporate owners want all those natural resources, so for them, it's fight, fight, fight. Something I outlined a couple of weeks ago on my last podcast. The morbidly wealthy billionaires don't care how many people die or become impoverished as long as they continue to amass insane amounts of wealth. I'm going to talk a little more about that here in a little bit. Europe is fading fast economically, and its largest countries are having major political problems. Germany's governing coalition has collapsed, and Chancellor Scholz looks to be on his way out soon. France's Prime Minister Barnier just resigned after only being in office for 3 months. Macron is defying everyone, saying he'll remain as president until 2027. The voters may have a say in that very soon. Is Macron going to declare himself a modern version of Napoleon, as one article said that I read about? Well, that's a good question. There are a lot of right-leaning political parties taking shape all over Europe that don't like the way their pro-Western governments have been spending their tax money on weapons for Ukraine and not spending money on domestic issues. Economies are failing because the governments cut off cheap Russian oil and gas over the war at the insistence of the United States. As I said, and it was brought up again in news this weekend, that the U.S. and Britain were the most likely saboteurs of the Nord Stream pipeline explosion back in 2022. It is yet to be proved, but there's a lot of evidence pointing in their direction. Was this a ploy to make Europe mad, the Russians, so the Americans can sell their LNG at a higher price? I listened to another podcast this week telling me that Europe now imports 70% of its LNG from the U.S., at about a 40% price increase over what they used to get from Russia. This is one of the main contributors to the EU's financial collapse, that and giving and selling on credit weapons to Ukraine, credit that Ukraine is likely to fall on after the war is over. As one European economist said on a Canadian podcast last weekend, Europe is cutting its throat despite the Russians at the behest of the United States. The U.S. doesn't stand to lose much in all this, but the EU nations most certainly are feeling the loss. This is destroying economies. If Trump brings back the notion about the U.S. leaving NATO, the EU will have to make some hard choices in order to keep their standard of living. Even then, it may be too late for Europe. The EU bloc may be on its last legs financially now, and it could spell big trouble for their national governments. Germany and France are two big examples, and more will come unless they divest themselves of the Americans a lot more. Russia and China don't have to be the bad guys. They don't want to be the bad guys. All Russia is asking for is for NATO to get out of their backyard with their military and leave them alone. If Western Europe doesn't want to trade, that's fine. China wants to trade with everyone, including the U.S. They are strong enough now that if someone doesn't want to trade with them, they'll find markets elsewhere, which they're doing, mostly in Africa and South America. That's one of the primary reasons that they started the BRICS alliance a few years ago, something a lot of other countries have noticed and want to join. They're all tired of being bullied by the West, especially the U.S., and they're looking for alternatives for trade where they don't have to be afraid about being sanctioned later on. Speaking of U.S. bullying, China is standing up to the latest bullying tactic of the U.S. with the blocking of chip technology once again. For a long time, the U.S. has said that China wants to use the advanced chip technology that they're getting from the U.S. to augment their military in order to take on the mighty U.S. They have sanctioned a Dutch chip company to prevent them from doing any business with China and blocked U.S. companies from doing chip business with China. All in the name of national security, of course. China is fighting back with enticing Chinese and other chip engineers to go to work in China and work for Chinese companies. They have invested heavily on their own advanced chip making technology in order to move away from needing anything from the United States. Given China's ability to surpass the Americans in research and development, I see a real possibility that it won't be too much longer before they won't need anything from the U.S. chip making industry. This will only further isolate the United States in the global trade wars and create even more economic problems very soon, as if the U.S. doesn't already have economic issues as it is. If China pulls further away from the U.S. in trading because of all this aggressive posturing, the U.S. economy will take an even bigger nosedive, and that will be that. The crashing of the U.S. economy will bring an end to the U.S. empire. Will the United States incur their own version of a government uprising? Will the angry people rise up to demand change? I would say that voting in Donald Trump this time was a cry for that change. Will he bring the changes needed, as he promised? No one knows for sure what he's going to do. He says a lot of things and does stupid stuff, like trying to outmuscle Emmanuel Macron at the Notre Dame reopening ceremony last weekend with a stupid handshake that went on for way too long, like he was trying to outmuscle him. But will he do something to save the American economy? It certainly doesn't look like it with all this talk about mass deportations, doing away with birth rights, and getting rid of the DACA program, deporting whole families in order to keep them together, even if some of them were native-born citizens. Meanwhile, health systems in the United States are failing badly. In an article by Jessica Wildfire, she writes about how the U.S. government has pretty much eliminated any safety precautions for COVID and all its variants. No mask mandates, no subsidies for personal protective equipment or anything. It's as if the government wants to completely wipe out any mention of COVID, bird flu, or anything else about viruses infecting people in order to keep everyone working. Forget about the death count. Forget about how long COVID is disabling a large portion of the labor force. Nothing else matters except people going to work so they can be taxed, so the government can spend that tax money on wars like in Ukraine and Palestine. The state of health care in general is so bad that the U.S. has lowered the average death age. It used to be really high, and now not so much. And it also has the highest rate of maternity deaths, as in, you know, pregnant women. And it has also one of the highest infant mortality rates, highest cancer rates, and so on. It has the most expensive healthcare system of any first-tier country on the planet, with the worst healthcare rating, even among countries with severe medical staffing shortages, such as Canada, Ireland, and the UK. In other health industry-related news, U.S. news media made quite the splash about a major health insurance CEO getting shot on a public street, killing him. What made this so special is this company was one of the most notorious regarding not paying claims and rewarding massive bonuses to the CEO and the other executives. Apparently, a lot of people have died because this company denied a lot of health coverage. A lot of people applauded the murder and hailed the shooter as a dark hero. The big picture, and one I try to point out to people, is that this is just another symptom of how sick American society is. Not so much the murder in and of itself, but the motive behind it. This young man has now been caught, so let the media frenzy begin. I speculated that once Trump reveals next year that he won't be keeping his campaign promises, a lot of people are going to get very angry and demand another change, maybe even violently out of frustration. Will we see more corporate executives get assassinated or have attempts made on their lives? Will there be protests in the street and violent crackdowns by the militarized police? Will Trump declare martial law and invoke the insurrection clause in the Constitution? With so many Americans having guns in the United States, if there were to be another Kent State incident, and for those who are too young to remember, that's when the National Guard shot some students at a university in Kent State, Ohio, during the Vietnam War days. The public backlash could start something even bigger and chaos would ensue. An armed uprising? Well, that's the question. I think the United States is headed for a major change in government in some fashion soon. We are seeing this happen everywhere else around the world, and the U.S. is ripe for it. It would only take the right spark, and they could see something unfold like we watched in Syria or South Korea last week. The trouble with that is usually when there's a violent uprising, the new governments usually turn out to be worse than the old ones. We have Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, and Ukraine to use as examples of how bad things could become in the United States if a popular uprising were to take place and they replaced the current government model with something more extreme, such as an authoritarian theocracy based on a Protestant Christian model. Can anyone say Project 2025? After the break, I have another chapter of The Priest that I will read for everyone. Michael Campy's tale of a dystopian future United States after economic collapse. So listen to my little commercial here, and I'll be back in a couple of minutes. I want to take this minute to explain how you can support this podcast and to advertise my book. The podcast is free and can be found on these major mobile podcast apps, on my YouTube channel, and my Substack page at Crown and Beehive, the Tree of Life at Substack.com. To help defray my cost, I'm asking for donations of any amount so everyone has an opportunity to watch or listen to this podcast anywhere in the world. I set up a donations tab at rss.com and the Village Oak Tree, and on my website at www.crownofbeehive.com, and I'll link to PayPal for your security. This way you can use any currency you wish from around the world, providing PayPal is available to you in your country. So now let me tell you about my book. Fugitives in the New United States, which can be found in all major online book retailers around the world, comes in hardcover, paperback, and ebook version. You don't want to wait for them to print you one. You can also buy a hardcover or paperback edition from me directly through the bookstore page on my website, and I'll ship it right out to you. This is a dystopian fiction about what the United States might look like by 2031 under a Christian theocracy. It's full of drama, action, and romance, set against a backdrop of U.S. societal collapse. The story follows a trio of resistance fighters as they navigate across Upper New England in their quest to escape from the authoritarian regime. So that's all I have here, and I appreciate any effort you can to support this endeavor that I'm doing, no matter how small it may be. Thank you very much. Welcome back. So let me read this story. And the reason I keep bringing these chapters to you is to kind of give you an idea of how things could look once the empire collapses And generally speaking, it's not, I don't expect, you know, major civil war and that kind of thing, you know, armed insurrections and things like that. I mean, sure, we've seen armed protests and little in small parts here in the United States, you know, back in 2020, you know, and a little bit after. But here's the thing. If the United States were to collapse, it's the economy is going to go. Okay. And it'll impoverish everybody. And that's basically what this story here, The Priest, is about. It's how the American economy collapsed due to climate change and everything that happened afterwards. So let me read The Priest, formerly known as Bob, Part 19 by Michael Campy. And this chapter is from a little bit different perspective. Hello, Dolly. There are a lot of myths and stories about people like me. We have been credited with exploits that defy what most people could imagine. It's the apocalypse now. And I guess there won't be anyone checking my bona fides, so I'll go ahead and I'll tell you. I was a member of an elite military group that, in the pre-collapse world, was tasked with finding bad guys and killing them. I never had a problem with the killing, just the choices of bad guys. A lot of the bad guys weren't really bad. They'd just done something to annoy one of the most powerful countries in the world, and that country didn't like to be annoyed. Mostly, we were trained to do dangerous things that other people wouldn't or couldn't do. We were taught how to kill people. There's nothing special or admirable about killing people. It's just something that has to be done when you've exhausted other options. What we did haunted a lot of guys for a long time. I was never haunted. I lived in New York for a while. When I was there, I met a guitar player for the Wendy O. Williams band. I asked him what it was like to play guitar for her, and he said, "It's kind of like being a garbage man, and someone has to do it." I felt the same way about my former job. I got out when we started killing more people who weren't bad than actual bad people. I moved to Sedona and snagged a little cabin that had originally been built way back in the 1930s for some reason or another, and it was on national park land. I knew the folks that lived there before me, and they had been stone carvers, and they hooked me up with the place. The best part about it was I could live there for free till some sort of lease agreement ended, but that wouldn't be for 20 years, and as everyone found out, we didn't have 20 years. The place was built into the side of a mountain with a small entranceway that led to a large cave, so it was kind of like a pre-need bunker. It was a comfortable place, and it never got hot, which is why I stayed when everyone else left. I figured I would take my chances on my own rather than try to find some other place with a bunch of people. You might have been wondering why I've been named Dolly, why I wear dresses. Let's start with the dresses. They're just a lot more comfortable than regular guy clothes, and that's about it. I'm not sure why I chose the name Dolly, maybe because I thought it would be less threatening than my old name, and I didn't want to scare people. It's possible that a well-muscled guy with a shaved head wearing a dress might be scary. But by the time I got that far, it was too late. I was hooked on the name and the dresses. Despite the collapse of Western civilization, my little house in the area, other than the heat, was a pretty idyllic space. I had seen firelight across the valley a few times and thought it was far enough away that I wouldn't have to worry about anyone intruding on my homestead. Whoever it was seemed content to stay in their lane. I wasn't thinking too much about it until I saw them roll into town. It was a kid, a cart, which looked nice, and a guy who was dressed like a priest, or maybe he was a priest. After they got settled in, I decided to go take a look. It had been a while since I'd interacted with another human, and maybe it would be fun. If it wasn't fun, then I could just kill them and take their stuff, which, in case you're wondering, is a perfectly legit action in the apocalypse. I hid out until they sounded like they were asleep and snuck in to take a look. I stood in the doorway for a while. Then the man woke up. That's how I met the priest and the kid. We got along famously. And so that's all I have for everyone this week. As I said, there's so much going on in the world right now. It's changing quickly, you know, almost from one day to the next. I try to weed out a lot of the junk news stories that you get from everywhere. I listen to people on you know, podcasts. I try to not listen to the same thing over and over again, because I'm telling you, things are so bad in so many places, you know, that you can get really depressed by watching the same stuff over and over again. Again, so I try to pick out the best ones. I'm still reading overseas news for as long as it is still available to me. And I kind of kind of wonder how long that's going to last. But still, reading the news, watching videos from outside the United States helps me, bring you what few people listen to this, an idea of what's going on outside of, American news censorship. And yes, trust me, it is alive and well. And for those who don't care, great. You can live with your head in the sand until, a scenario like the priest hits you in the butt, and then you'll be forced to pay attention. But still, I think we're a long way off from that yet. But, I have a feeling it could get really bad, but, in my lifetime, and I've only got maybe 20, 25 years left at best, considering the health crisis here in the United States. So we'll see how that goes. I do think I'm going to be talking more in the future about the health crisis here, the health industry crisis, I should say, here in the United States. I'm starting to see more stories about that hit the news feeds. As far as what's going on overseas, again, it's all a watch and see. I think a lot of things are going to change over there over the next few weeks. And, nobody knows for sure what's going to happen. So, again, we'll have to see. Meanwhile, stay safe, be good, and I'll talk to you again in a week or two. Sláinte. Thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoyed it, and you'll return again for more political discourse. Please like, subscribe, reply, and share the videos or audio podcasts, however you watch or listen. The goal here is to resist the authoritarians who want to take our freedoms away from us. I appreciate everyone around the world, no matter where or who you are. Together, using independent media, we can resist the authoritarian governments in the West and keep them from taking everything away from us. As I say goodbye this week, I wish to leave you with this Irish blessing as you go about your day. May the sun warm you a bit, the air be as fresh as after a spring rain, and the birds be singing to you on your way up the lane. Slán go fóill.